Among the many activities we engage in as humans, the making of art is the most sophisticated.
You're listening to the Beaver County History Podcast, a production of the Social Voice Project.
Around the world and through time, this question comes universally. What is art?
First,
the elements of art are line.
For the sake of clarity,
shape,
I'll use the definition
space,
of art as
color,
the quality,
value,
production, expression,
texture,
or realm, according to aesthetic principles.
Successful art uses the visual language to express something universal.
But how exactly does that work?
Every work of art has at least one of these elements, or may have many elements all working together.
Art is everything around us.
Our eyes are like windows to the world.
Art is everywhere.
Look at the sky.
It helps us to see the big picture.
Human beings made art in order to convey perceptions, feelings, and emotions.
So, how can we express something that we can't put into words?
So actually, we don't see with our eyes. We see with our brains.
You attempt to answer the question, what is art, by rejecting the premise that an object's state of being art is subjective, and therefore you reject that anything, or everything, is or can be art subjectively.
What good is art anyway? My answer to that question is another question. What good is life?
If the intent was to illustrate a banana, but the painting clearly illustrates an apple, then it's bad art. Good art, bad art.
What I mean is that it has nothing to do with the quality of the art.
Good art makes one happy,
What matters is the story that's told around the art. Sometimes it's that the artist has an interesting life. The story could be any number of things. There's not like one story that makes it all work, but it is the story that counts.
We are here on location again at Merrick Art Gallery, one of Beaver County's hidden gems. This place is amazing. We're sitting in the grand gallery here with Sue Ireton, who's administrative assistant here, but she's also very, very knowledgeable about the artwork that's here. So welcome, Sue, for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
We are very excited to talk about art, and gosh, there are so many paintings here, and they are just so wonderful. We could spend a week here.
Yes. Yes. And in fact, I would like to spend my entire work time up here just staring at them.
For those who have not been here, and you have to come here to New Brighton, to the Merrick Art Gallery, when you come into this, the main gallery here and all the other rooms that they have, the artwork is displayed in the old salon style, which is vertically up the walls. So if you have poor eyesight, you may not be able to see the paintings way up there, which is, by the way, is one, where the Corbet is. There's actual Gustave Corbet here, which is amazing. It's way up there at the top. But some of these are just so huge. Wow, you know, what, 5 feet across some of these? I mean, just amazing works that are... Well, you know what? I don't know this. I'm going to let you. You're the expert, Sue. That's why you're here. I'm doing your job for you. Tell us about the art here.
Okay. We have a very fine collection of 19th and 18th century American and European art. And I have always likened it to be comparable in quality to anything you would see in New York, the Chicago Art Institute, or any one of the huge museums in L.A. It truly is a masterpiece exhibit. And you do need to come and visit in order to enjoy the beauty of it. Along with the Gustave Courbet, we also have several Kensets and Durand. And those three people in particular are part of the Hudson River School. Now, that was not a physical school. It was a grouping of artists who painted landscapes predominantly on the upper Hudson River in upstate New York. And their exploration and goal was basically trying to capture how atmosphere changes the look of the landscape in the distance compared to what's up close to you and in the foreground. So they developed a system of depicting the atmosphere. Now, if you take a photograph, the photograph is going to show you, you know, perfect detail, even, you know, 2 miles away, really, and bright, vivid colors. But your eye does not see it that way. So when you try to capture what your eye sees, you need to dull out the colors in the distance and gray them because the atmosphere there is thicker there between you and what you're trying to paint. And then as the things come forward into the foreground, there is less graying out, more vivid colors and much greater detail.
Using your imagination. That's really what you're talking about.
I mean,
so the optics are working on your imagination. This kind of landscape, you know, that, and it's tied back to the whole manifest destiny movement, the romanticization of American landscapes all the way out west.
Right. And the painters in those days actually did not, well, they had some photography, but it was black and white. There was no color. And so those artists in the Hudson River School and other artists of that time period did what they call plein air painting. In other words, they hiked out there, took their easels out and their box of paints and their canvases and actually sat there and painted what they saw.
And let's just stop for a moment and put this into perspective. When these paintings were created, there was photography, of course, but there wasn't color photography.
Correct.
Like we have today. So if you wanted to know at the time, if you wanted to know what things looked like across the country, these vast landscapes across America, this is the way you knew, right? Through the artistry of these master painters.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. I just find this amazing. Hey, joining us here also is Alenka Keller, who's the executive director here at Merrick. And you have a favorite painting here? You get to look at this stuff all day long. How wonderful.
Yes, there are so many favorites. We have over 400 paintings hanging in our gallery. We certainly invite people from locally and from all over the world, because I know you have a global audience, Kevin.
81 countries we've been
81 countries. We have paintings from many countries in Europe, France, Germany,
Switzerland,
England. Many of them look like they may be from a Dutch kitchen, from all over the world. Many with animals, because I understand that during that time that cows and sheep and pastoral scenes were very popular. I love the cows.
Do you have one particular favorite that you have here?
Well, I don't have one favorite, but many people think that Shipwrecked is one of our larger paintings, and it's very tragic. It's very beguiling. Many, many people say that is their favorite. Now, I have to say also that along with the value of these paintings, which is great, in some cases, the frames are just as valuable as the paintings. And that is very interesting.
And these are stunning old world frames.
Yes.
I mean, they're ornate. Sue, would you call these Baroque?
Not quite Baroque, but perhaps Renaissance. Late Renaissance, early Baroque, yeah.
Yeah, they are certainly ornate, florid in some cases.
Yeah, and the carvings on the frames in that is an art form by itself. And painters, 99% of the time, did not make their own frames. They purchased the frames, you know, and then put their paintings in them.
So do you know about the frame makers at all, or with this collection?
Well, there are a lot of them that actually, they're not wood carved. Actually, the carvings are plaster applied to the wood. And part of that is because they used oak for frames. And oak is a hardwood. It's extremely difficult to carve. Whereas the plaster is much softer, easier to carve. And so they applied the plaster to the wood, carved it, and then applied the gold leaf over the top.
Oh, I see. Interesting. Now, you have these, their boxes, planking around.
Right.
Is that just for protection, or is that actually part of the salon style of presentation?
No, it's actually for protection. And in a lot of your big museums, the viewers are roped off 2 to 3 feet away from the wall, so you can't even get, you know, as close. Whereas here, you can walk literally right up nose to nose with the painting. But at the same time, we want to protect the carving, plaster there again being soft. And so that is part of the reason. And as I understand it, some of them were actually the outer ring of the shipping box that they came in.
Oh, so made use of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, this is one of the few significant galleries where you can get so up close and personal to these work. I mean, you could get right up there and look at the cracking and the brush strokes. And to me, I find that really fascinating. You know, you cannot look at works of art like this online on your flat screen or your handheld devices or whatever and get it. You have to come here and you have to stand in front of a 5-foot painting and let your eyeballs go from left to right and get up close, and that's how you get it, I think, right?
Yeah. Kevin, one more word about the frames. The New York Metropolitan Museum of Art was so impressed with our frames that they actually have a collection in New York at the gallery that they hang throughout the year at certain times.
Wow.
Yeah.
He bought more frames than he had paintings.
Dempster Merrick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. How interesting.
Mm-hmm. Dempster lived in New York City. After he worked here as an industrialist under the tutelage of his father, he went to New York and pursued his real love, which was art. So he was very well known in the New York City society circles. And he wanted the people of New Brighton and Beaver County to experience fine art. So he set up a trust, and that's how we've been able to keep the gallery free. There is no charge to come into the gallery.
That's a remarkable thing today. That's a remarkable thing. And to think that he had that notion from the get-go.
Yes.
Right. And that I believe that is in the
will.
The will, the trust deed.
Yes.
So, a lot of people say, look at this gallery and this art. It must be expensive, yada, yada, and the wealth. But to keep this place open, free, I mean, that takes a lot of doing.
Yeah.
And so, Alenka, as the new executive director, Sue, as one of the administrators here, you are doing an amazing job keeping this place free. I mean, so as we've been sitting here podcasting today, we've had people come in, walked around, they looked at art, they were talking. You could hear them on earlier podcast episodes. That's the way this should be. This should be an active space where people come, they stand, they let their eyeballs walk around the art, but they also talk about the art. They talk to you. You guys are accessible to give the history of the building, of the art here. How amazing this is. Now, let me ask you, do you know when Dempster Merrick had this notion of bringing this fine art to Little Beaver County at the time, where was the nearest fine art? Was it in Pittsburgh, which is 30 miles from here? Was that the only place?
Yeah.
So this was sort of like a fine art desert, if you will, in 1880s, right?
Well, I think he also admired the collection of Carnegie, Andrew Carnegie. You'll find that, they may parallel in certain ways, but there is a portrait of Andrew Carnegie here, and I think Dempster did admire his collection.
Was Carnegie displaying his art at the time, 1880s?
No. Oh, I think he did, but I don't think the museum was actually there to the extent that it is today.
Oh, I can imagine that.
But they traveled and they collected in the same cities.
Yeah.
And so they knew what each other had.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know how this art was received when it was first put here? I mean, were people excited? Did they show up?
He actually lived within the building and would quite often entertain the Society of New Brighton Beaver or in the surrounding area, and then at the same time expose them, to his collection.
You also had industrialists who came here. We had an opera house here in New Brighton at the time.
Oh.
We had hotels. Stephen Foster was a frequent visitor to the Merrick's Hotel. And when you enter New Brighton, you see big sort of castle-like homes when you enter. There are quite a few of them. So I think some of those industrialists, probably because of the access to the river, they had homes here also, just like they did in Swickley.
So we're talking a bit of high culture here.
Yeah.
How amazing. Now, this building was a train station.
No. That building was the train station.
Okay, so let's just sort of paint this picture for our listeners here. Mm-hmm. There are two very long sides to this building. We're in the big main gallery, which is newer than the other side of the building, which was the actual long train station. You can imagine along a platform.
Right, and originally both of them were only the first floor.
First floor.
Right. What sat here was a church on this side. And it was struck by lightning, burned to the ground. And when they rebuilt on 3rd Avenue. So he purchased the property where the church sat plus the yard next to it. And then he built the first floor here. And as his collection continued to expand, then he put the second story on each building. And actually, the original building didn't go back on, that was the train station, didn't go back any further than the office. So he actually added back on the first floor first, and then second story on each building. And you used to come in through the garden and come up a set of stairways into this room first. In the 1980s, the walkway between the two buildings was so deteriorated it was going to need to be replaced. And so what they did was then they put the glass enclosure, which is now our lobby, and then you could start coming in through that way. And they did some other renovations. And then the next renovation was all of the redecorating of the two rooms downstairs, the one we call the Edwardian room and the orientation room. And then the next thing, we had a master gardener make us a Victorian garden. And then the pavilion is just recently, that's only about 5 years old. And now the parking lot is our last major renovation or addition to the gallery.
Well, in addition to the art, I mean, this is just a lovely building.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely grounds. You have a wonderful verdant space outside with the pavilion. It's really a nice visit here. It
yes.
really is. And this is used for weddings and other events like
yes.
that?
Yes. You can have your wedding in the main gallery. You just have to have your reception downstairs or out in the garden. My oldest son got married in the garden, actually, in July, 10 years ago. And so we've had many, many weddings out there. You can also rent either the Edwardian room or the orientation room for showers, baby showers, wedding showers, graduations, birthday parties, or business meetings. We've had several of the chambers in here that have their annual dinners in the Edwardian room. We have a caterer's kitchen, which is sanctioned by the state of Pennsylvania. In other words, the...
certified. Is it?
Thank you. you're younger than I am, I can tell. Yes, certified. So that caterers who are also certified by the state of Pennsylvania can use that kitchen.
So that's a full-service kind of venue
yep. yes.
Here.
Yes.
I think what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, this is an art gallery and this is a meeting destination place for weddings and banquets and things, but it is also an historical site.
Yes.
So although this building was not involved with the Underground Railroad, right across the street, the house was.
Yes.
In the basement, there are tunnels, but the train station was here during that time.
Right.
And the Merricks were here during the time
right.
as well. So right. there's and the Merrick Art Gallery is a member of the Beaver County History Coalition,
right.
which makes it an historical destination as right. well as a fine arts destination.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, wonderful. This is yeah. wonderful.
And, you know, as someone who has the education degree also, we have classes here 3 times a year. We have children's classes, which spring and fall runs 5 Saturdays. In the summer, we have a 2-week art camp. That is Tuesday through Friday from 9:30 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon. We have an excellent, excellent, highly qualified teacher. Her name is Elizabeth Demasimo, and she just does wonderful things with the kids. And then we also have workshops for teenagers. We've done caricatures, we've done cartooning, and all of the things that young people, you know, would be interested in. And we've also had adult workshops.
Do you have any live nude drawing classes that involve wine and cheese? I think that would be worthwhile. I would attend one of those.
We have done the wine and cheese thing where we've taken a portion of one of our paintings. And, you know, we do help the non-artist or someone who doesn't feel quite as confident in that field. So we've kind of sketched out the rough of it on the canvas for them. And then they can spend an evening and paint it as well as imbibing in the wine and the cheese.
Okay, so now I'm going to ask you some of the hard questions.
Okay.
Why do you think more people don't know about Merrick Art Gallery?
Well, I think for a long period of time, even after the internet sort of started to take off, I don't think that there was quite the advertising that we're trying to do. And as been done over the more recent years. At one time, the schools used to come, but now it's become so expensive, and you have to have X number of parents to come with the children. Of course, most of your households nowadays are two parents working, so it's kind of difficult on that end of it as well. We'd like to see more of that and, you know, certainly get the kids involved. And that is probably part of the reason why they didn't expand their marketing outside of Beaver County.
But all that is changing now.
Yes, absolutely.
100-something years and we're getting our act together.
125.
125 years.
Yeah.
Wow. So when you look back on that, you have to give credit to those who kept the lights on, kept the heat on,
right,
maintained the building, paid the taxes.
Yep.
Constantly invited the public to be a part of this free gallery. So, you know, we have to tip our hats to those who came before us.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We also want to recognize, you know, on this podcast, which is, you know, really designed to celebrate Beaver County local history across the board and all the different areas of the county and different types of, from agricultural history to industrial history. We have all that here. We really want to celebrate what we have here in terms of the fine arts history that Merrick so well represents.
Yep, for sure.
And we want to recognize you all for doing that.
Oh, thank you.
So we're here with Betty Douglas, who is a longtime expert and resident artist and historian of Merrick Art Gallery. Is that right? How would you describe your relationship with Merrick?
I don't know that there is a description. I could be sort of the jack of all helps. But it was probably in 1971 or so that I received a phone call from Eva Mae Merrick. At the time, I was on the faculty at Geneva College, and saying that she wanted to do more with bringing local interest to the Merrick Art Gallery. And one of the ways she wanted to do that was by having exhibitions by contemporary local artists, since the museum is a museum. And she asked, would I be willing to prepare a show? And I said, yes, I would. And so I did that, and it was in 1972. We had a big opening, and it was very well attended, and the work sold well and so forth. And she simply asked me, would I mind becoming one of the persons that helped her to expand the range of interest in and contact with the gallery? And I said yes. And one of the things I did was, for the students taking the history of art courses, which I taught, when they had to do special projects like write papers or do research, instead of having to go all the way into Pittsburgh, they could come over here. And there were people who live right here in the valley that were not aware of the treasure that we have in this historic collection.
We hear this so much, that Merrick is this treasure that no one seems to know about, although it's been here since the 1880s.
And the building itself, of course, is fascinating, that it was once a railroad stop. And so, and the Merrick family and Standard Horsenail, the history of that industry is itself important. I said the high-tech item of the 1800s were horse nails. I said, who needs horse nails nowadays? I said, but I'll tell you what we do need. We need all of the innards that make those little things that we walk around with in our pockets.
So do you think the public over the years, since you started to engage the public with contemporary art, do you think that Merrick's reputation has grown and benefited because of that?
Yes, I do, but still not enough. I think that Beaver Valley people, maybe they have one of the, what they call low esteem problems. Everyone thinks you have to go into Pittsburgh for everything. But sometimes people from Pittsburgh and other important regional art institutions come down here, and they are amazed because they don't know about it either. And so we really need to do more with making lines of contact between us as an institution and between the other cultural institutions that are scattered around this area, especially in eastern Ohio, like places like Salem and Akron and Youngstown, and keep contact with the Hoyt in Newcastle, for example. Started on a similar basis. Local industrialists wanted to do something to secure a cultural legacy for their area. And many of these small towns don't realize that they're sitting on veritable gold mines. You know, the Merrick can become a destination point, especially if we say we're to cooperate with some of the local institutions, like the fine eating places and the fine clothing places and so forth. We don't have any cultural councils down here.
How do you think children are poised to understand this art collection here? Do you think arts education is alive and well?
Children are excited by anything new. I know my own children and grandchildren, you know, took classes over here, and when they come home, they want to know what's going on over at the Merrick. I think some of the publications saw my grandkids sitting at the table grinning, you know. Children are excited by so many things, but they are excited by the things that they see their elders excited about. You know, if mommy and daddy like this, we like it too, or at least want to know about it. And I would find that sometimes children can very quickly grasp what a work of art is saying. And upstairs in the room where they have the paintings of the sea, the seascapes, and the one where there's the child reading to the older woman, and children look at that and they relate immediately. They can see them as people, not just as pictures. And so preschool and elementary school children are very open to what's going on around them. I was at the Carnegie Museum yesterday at the Carnegie International, and a lot of people were there with very young children, and I got such a kick out of seeing them hop and skip around, you know, and look at the things in their eyes, you know, so forth.
Although the art here is very old, the building itself is very old, this is still a place that young people...
It's new to them. It's new. And you know how you can remember as being a kid when you discovered something that was from the olden days, as they used to call it. Oh, look, look. I know I grew up in a house in Beaver Falls that had been built before the Civil War. And when my dad was trying to make it livable for a 20th century family, and we found all sorts of interesting things in that. It was one of those old solid brick houses, double brick houses, built on a stone foundation without mortar, one of those where they had to choose the stones and lay them in place so that it would be there. And this was a house, pre-Civil War house, in downtown Beaver Falls. I can remember we were so excited about the things that we discovered that made my parents groan, like 10-foot ceilings.
Well, Betty, thanks so much for sharing some of your thoughts here about the gallery. We want to do an oral history with you at some point in the future so we can get a really detailed account of your experiences here with the building and the gallery and with the Merrick family. So we look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
You're very well. Again, as someone would say, don't start a conversation with her. She'll talk for 55 minutes.
For more Beaver County history, visit the Beaver County History Podcast, a production of the Social Voice Project.